Live from WRCT Studios in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Hour, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
I'm ready for another Total Education Hour. The anniversary show is so much fun, reminiscing. But, you know, we didn't have a ton of content last week, but it just was so awesome to thank everyone involved in the process of how we were able to get where we were at. And it's so much fun and some exciting things coming in 2013. But to close off 2013, we have some really interesting shows. I first want to welcome to the program Dr. Jennifer Little. Dr. Jennifer, how are you?
I'm Neil. I'm glad to be back.
Well, I'm glad you're back, too, and I'm glad that you're back on a line that we can really pick you up, especially where you're located today. And we're gonna talk about one of your guiding principles. Then you're going to introduce our guest. So tell us the guiding principle for today.
Okay. I probably should go back for the first guiding principle is we need to know what works. And we've had the discussion of we really don't know what works or why it works. So the second one is looking at the greater good of everybody involved in what's being served in education and who's making the decisions. We need to have accurate information for people who are making the decisions, and the evaluation process has to be appropriate so that we can find out what is working and what isn't working, and making things work, improving things. So that's the principle. But getting to all of that is going to be very interesting. And I asked that Carson Pei be a guest because he has a very unique view of education, and you might want to find out about that.
All right, Carson, tell us about the unique uniqueness of education.
That set up right off the bat, huh, Neil?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I don't necessarily know if it's unique. What I would characterize it as, it's the experience that I can relate to. So, you know, I just know what I lived, and you know, and looking back, I had really good parents. I came from a nice middle class family, and my parents tried to do the best they could. And in my particular case, looking back, the public school education system let me down, at least in speaking with Jennifer, a couple of key grades. One of was the third grade, where I was blessed to have a third-fourth combination, and where the fourth graders were not as bright as the third graders, so I had pretty much a waste of the year. And then in the sixth grade, I was in the fifth-sixth combination that had the teacher was a fifth grade teacher and didn't bother teaching the principles of sixth grade to the sixth graders. So
There
were a couple of things to kind of give you some background is I'm a twin. So what my parents were trying to do is there were two principles that they were working toward. One was to make sure that we had separate identities, and the other one was to make sure we had quality education. So a lot of my parents' decisions were based on keeping us separate so that my twin sister had a different set of education curriculum, and I went down a different path, and so I kind of paid the price for that. So that's kind of a couple of my unique circumstances.
Okay, so quite interesting. We'll find out why that happened and some interesting things with education. So basically, Dr. Jennifer, what you're saying is this: we're going to talk about the decisions that are made now in education, right? Is that the guiding principle? And I think that we're really running into this a big time now. And we see a country split. We see a country split, and they have different ideas of what to do with education. And we see, ideologies split in so many ways. The teachers and the unions against everyone else in certain ways. So I think that the decision-making is done by the politicians, the school district, the school board. A lot of them have never been in the classroom as a teacher ever. And that's what your biggest pet peeve, isn't it, Dr. Jennifer?
That's one of them. But all of those decisions that people are making are based on their beliefs and assumptions that are being made. We've already covered, at least at a cursory level, the assumptions, because there's much more to the assumptions than what we have covered. But we don't know what we believe until we're tested and somebody challenges us, and we don't know that we're making assumptions, but the assumptions are being made. For example, with Carson's experience in third grade, why was he having a hard time in school?
Because they decided to put third and fourth grade together.
It was much more than that. Carson, you want to explain?
I'll just kind of explain the best that I can. In my experience, why I was put into that circumstance was the intent behind it was to have the fourth graders pull up the third graders, and kind of like when you play sports and you're always playing against someone a little bit better than you, you should accelerate or become better at sports more quickly. Well, the reality is the reverse happened with me, is because when you have a upper grade level that is performing worse or about the same as the lower grade level, you don't get that trampoline effect, and instead what happened was it actually slowed down my growth because the teacher focused her efforts on getting the fourth graders up to their level and neglected the third graders. So, I mean, there was, my experience was a whole series of those types of events. The reality is when you're going through it, it's just normal. So when you say it's unique, you brought that. In my experience, it's normal to me because that's what happened to me.
Well, throwing in on that, that was his perception. Third grade at that time was when the hardest decoding skills in reading were taught. So with the fourth graders being focused on, the third graders were not getting the attention that they needed on what skills that were necessary, final building blocks.
And so whoever made those decisions, Dr. Jennifer, that's what the biggest problem is, right?
Well, the administrators who did that were looking at probably a bunch of low-performing fourth grade, figuring that getting them in some instruction again with third graders, they might need that extra boost. But as Carson says, a lot of people were expecting that the fourth graders would pull up the third graders, that the third graders would benefit from the fourth. When in fact, it was a cost, at least to Carson.
And it's the situation where peer tutoring different grade levels, having fourth and third graders together or fifth and sixth graders together, or whatever two grades together, it's just not, it doesn't work because of the, I guess, the personalities, the developmental differences, and to expect fourth graders to be mature enough to teach the third graders, Carson, that must have been a complete fiasco.
Well, you know, keep in mind, I mean, you know, you're what I would say is it's really a Jennifer question. From my perspective, I'm an 8-year-old. So, you know, I'm just going through whatever the teacher tells me to do. I don't have the distinction of saying whether it's good or bad. I just know I'm just doing what the teacher is expecting me to do. What I can say is, you know, based on Jennifer's experience, that was a critical year. Well, what I can say is that my parents weren't trying to set me up to fail. My parents were actually trying to set me up to succeed. So when she met with the principal and she met with the people, when my parent was part of the PTA program, and so they actually were involved. They were involved parents, and they were trying to do what they were that was in my best interest based on what the educators were telling my parents was in my best interest. Unfortunately, it didn't work out that way.
And so I guess you can't remember that far back if the fourth graders just didn't work. It was just a poor decision made, Dr. Jennifer, that hurt Carson and many other kids.
Well, what also happens developmentally and demand-wise is that with fourth graders, they are expected to work independently, whereas third graders are still dependent upon teacher direction. So you've got that factor going on. You've got pacing of the instruction that's going on. You have content that's entirely different. And Carson, was the classroom crowded or not?
Yeah, I mean, if I were to guess, I mean, we probably had between 25 and 30 students. So I don't know if that's crowded or not, but, you know, that's roughly what I would say. It was a full classroom.
Very interesting. So so far we've been talking to Carson Pei and Dr. Jennifer Little about the decisions that are made in schools. And like I'll keep saying this over and over again, there are a lot of poor decisions being made right now with the people in charge. One of those is to continue to teach to a test. The other one is to disband any type of semblance of education except to teach to the test. And then to hold teachers accountable and to provide standardized testing, and to provide measures for those teachers if those kids score well. So these decisions that are being made is going to implode any type of progress that's been made so far. Right, Dr. Jennifer?
Yeah, we don't even know what is causing the problems. We do not know why the kids are failing in school. They're, as you well know, they're making those who are making decisions are making assumptions, for example, like No Child Left Behind. Well, they're not getting enough reading instruction, so we step it down to kindergarten. Well, is that an appropriate response to kids who are not developmentally ready for reading?
No, it's not a good response. Not at all.
But the people who are making the decisions don't have accurate information. They're in a deficit, and I'm sure they were doing it with good intent, but from my experience, like, you put a premature boy in kindergarten at 5 years old, they're not 5 years old like everybody else is. They are usually developmentally ready, maybe like a 3.5 or 4-year-old. Yet they're being pushed like a 5-year-old. And one time I was teaching in a kindergarten class, and I was just doing the lesson, and I had this little kid in tears. He was a blonde, blue-eyed, late birthday boy. I knew what the problem was, but I couldn't do anything about it.
Because of the decision-making. So I want to go to Carson, and I don't know, Carson, if you've been kind of researching out in the education field or seeing things, that the decisions being made are, what would you do? How would you change education for what I was talking about?
Well, let me just put in my perspective on if I were to do things differently, and I think, I mean, you know, if we had the perfect crystal ball, I would have put me in the same classes as my sister. My sister had the more demanding teachers. My sister had the ones that were probably the better teachers in the school program, and my sister excelled, and I was kind of behind. In my particular case, one of the advantages that I had that other students don't have is in seventh grade I started private school, where you went back to standards and you had the basic stuff. But I was playing so much catch up that it was so difficult. Seventh grade was a very difficult year for me, especially when it came to maturing. Is that I had great self-esteem coming out of sixth grade, but I was a happy idiot. I was essentially illiterate, and it wasn't until summer school, right before the seventh grade, where a teacher showed me how to actually write a sentence. So, I mean, it's ridiculous for a kid to come out of a decent school district to not be able to even understand what a basic sentence is. And so the biggest challenge that I had was I just didn't have teachers that caught, you know, when they saw me falling behind, nobody caught up to me. No one explained what the problem was. And my parents had my IQ tested. And fortunately, I've got a smart enough IQ where I've been able to overcome many of the challenges that I had. And it was interesting because Jennifer did a very simple test for me, which was taking a look at a picture and essentially describe the subject. But how my brain works is I don't look at the subject matter. I look at all the detail, but I miss the big picture. And so what Jennifer explained to me is that's really a deficiency of my third, fourth, fifth, and sixth grade grade product where I didn't get the main concept. So throughout my life, I've been battling, you know, innocuous type of thing, some type of learning disorder that I didn't even realize that I had. So I've been, you know, my life has been characterized without realizing of kind of overcoming stuff that other people didn't need to do. And it was almost solely a product based on my education.
All right. When we get back, more with Carson Pei and Dr. Jennifer Little. And I want to kind of put my two cents in about how we can kind of change things. And this is what the guiding principles and then also the assumptions. How do we fix education? When we get back, we'll talk more. You're listening to Education. When we get back, more education talk. We'll be back in just a moment. We're back to Total Education Network, and we're back with Dr. Jennifer Little and Carson Pei. And what I'm learning tonight is decision-making not always is the politician's problem. Sometimes it ends up being more than just the politician's issue. It ends up becoming more of a situation where local control makes those decisions. School boards make these decisions. Principals make these decisions. And that's where I want to go to Dr. Jennifer. Sometimes some of the stupidity has to do with the principal. They're the ones that maybe the building-wide decide to try something, and it becomes a fiasco.
I think it's not necessarily stupidity, but it's ignorance as to what is really going on. And the principals, teachers don't even know what's going on with kids.
Right.
They'll look at a kid and they know that something's not quite right, but they don't know what it is. And Carson and I were talking while you were on break, and he was having problems in second grade. Well, it turns out he was also a low birth weight baby, probably not full gestation, just simply because there's not enough room for twins and they are typically early. So he's set up by being low birth weight, early, and male to have learning problems because schools are geared for solid birth weight, full gestation girls.
Exactly, and I want to kind of jump right in. They want education to be one-size-fits-all type thing. They don't look at, specifically enough, Carson maybe started again too early. He could have waited to be in school compared to his sister. But, you know, we only educate one type of student sometimes, and what it leads to our problems, right, Carson? Meaning they don't look at...
I mean, the answer is I don't know the answer to that question because I'll just take your word for it. I mean, that's not my expertise. What I can just share is what I experienced. And for me, I remember there was one vivid example in the second grade where I remember I had to learn the word priest, and I misspelled it. I put the E in front of the I. You know, one of those simple things where I didn't know it. I got it wrong. And I remember that you know, the teacher, you know, looking back, the teacher was probably somewhat frustrated with me. And from my standpoint, I wasn't a really behavior problem. I sat in the cynics chair, which was the closest to the door, and I did exactly what the teacher asked of me, the bare minimum. So instead of, I never had anybody push me, and I remember going home and telling my dad that, you know, I missed the word priest because I got the I and the E screwed up. Well, what's going on behind the scenes at that time, as I later learned, is because, as I said, my mom was a PTA mom. So I was labeled the yellow bird, which was a slower student.
Right.
And so my parents went in and got my IQ tested, and they realized that I didn't have an IQ problem. So once again, it's an example where my parents did everything that was asked of them, and in fact, above and beyond the call of duty, where they took money out of their own pocket to get my out of their pockets to get my IQ tested. And my problem came. What I'm really learning based on the conversation between you two is the teacher did. She may have assessed my learning, but she misassessed my ability.
Yeah.
In my particular case, I wasn't a stupid kid. I was actually a really bright kid. I just wasn't, I for, you know, in Jennifer's case, you know, the experts can explain exactly what happened. All I know is I'm just doing exactly what the teacher's asking me to do, and I'm falling further behind, and I don't know what to do, and my parents don't know what to do. They're getting the advice on the teacher, and clearly it wasn't an IQ problem. That's the start. I mean, as Jennifer said, it probably started in first grade. Once again, my parents made the choice of separating us because at the time, once again, for me, it was first grade, I'd be six, so it was probably circa 1973. So it was a period of time where my folks were trying to do the best thing, and when what was first and foremost was in first grade was separate both of us. So we had our own identity.
Right.
That was what my parents' main focus was.
Let me get to this really, because I think I'm understanding this very, very well in certain ways from our conversation. I think that what happens, and I got a story for us, that basically these things happen a lot. Teachers misdiagnose. Teachers think they know it all. They go ahead and put that red flag out. They're concerned about a child. And here's the story. A teacher evaluated a child thinking he had ADHD and a learning disability. Went through the process, you know, did the testing. That came up. But later on, you look more and more about it, and it might have not been ADHD that the family figured out. And the child figured out later on that he was gifted. But the parents heard from a teacher, the professional, this is what it is. So they treated it like that. Then later on, when that person grew up, they found out, you know what? They were all wrong. And that's the concern we all have to have, because we have a one-size-fits-all education. Someone like that story will end up like that based on misdiagnosis, evaluated based on professionals that are doing a heck of a job, but yet just because they're doing such a great job doesn't mean that they're going to not make mistakes, just like doctors make mistakes. So I think that if we continue to have this one-size-fits-all education, Dr. Jennifer, we're going to be in trouble. We really will.
I think we're in trouble because the teachers are being made held accountable for something that they don't bear the responsibility for creating. Teachers are accountable for everything, but they're not the ones who have set these standards or, like in Carson's case, made decisions about the kids. There are so many factors that come into play as we learn and grow that we have to be much more fluid. And you're right, the one size fits all doesn't work, because if we're trying to put all the square pegs in the round holes, we don't have anything in the round hole except round holes, which are probably girls who are doing fine.
And I guess Carson's our guinea pig tonight to tell us about what's wrong with education. And I'm sure people driving in the car are saying, oh, come on now, you're placing this out there. But there are stories all over the place. They're really good teachers. There are really good schools. But yet you do find bad teachers in bad schools. Sometimes it's not the teacher's fault, it's the school's fault. It could be the principal's fault, it could be the school board's fault, it could be the school district's fault, or it could be the state's fault. So decisions that are made a lot of times are not for the child, but for politically, for, I guess, popular opinion, for cost effectiveness.
And they're made on our beliefs and assumptions that we're making that are not appropriate.
Exactly. And to revolutionize, which I had with Dr. Jennifer the one time, and then she thought I went out of control. And don't worry, I just had some coffee to kind of keep awake, because I'm still not getting the greatest amount of sleep, but I am really working it hard in the office throughout the day, getting ready to do this show. But I'm motivated right now, so I should be okay with that cup of coffee. But what I'm hearing on both ends of this is, guess what? We need to fix education. and all the ideas that are going on aren't working, and there's story after story after story after story. I was thinking of creating a show based on interviewing students, what they didn't like about their teacher, what they didn't like about school, because we need to look at what kids like, because if they're not motivated to learn, they're not going to learn. So, Carson, tell us, how were you kind of bored in class or just frustrated from all these changes?
I don't think either one. I just think, you know, I don't recall. I mean, I don't recall being bored. I just was just trying to survive. I mean, really looking, you know, keep in mind what you're asking me as a question as a 7-year-old.
Exactly.
I'm just trying to survive, and, you know, I mean, you don't have distinctions. Where really, you know, as a second grader, you just want to be a good kid and sit there and, you know, do what's asked of you. I mean, what in retrospect, what I would say is what I realized is how I learned is if someone showed me how to do something. I remember distinctly when my English teacher at the private school just said, oh, when you're done with the thought, put a period there. Oh, that makes a ton of sense. You know, it's repeatable. It's really, I mean, how tough of a concept is that? So, but because someone actually showed me, you're done with this idea here, this is why you put a period here. And it was as simple as that. And there were, you know, many times where, and in college writing, you know, the difference between an independent and a subordinate clause. Oh, well, a subordinate clause does this, and then you put a comma, and then you do it. That's when, I'm learning the piecemeal education system because of all the challenges that I had ahead of time. I didn't think I had a learning disability. I just knew that I was just trying to survive, and my writing style was very choppy, very, very matter of fact, and, you know, I did okay, but I just realized that, okay, this is the cards that I'm dealt. When in fact, you know, in speaking with Jennifer, it's not the cards that I was dealt. It was the byproduct of really terrible, you know, critical skills that I did not get. And for whatever reason it was, I mean, it's irrelevant now, but the reality is there were clear red stop signs, and everyone drove right through them.
Oh, my.
And so, you know, I mean, you know, I'm not the expert of knowing it. My parents aren't experts in knowing it. Someone has to pick up, someone like me, because I should be, honestly, I should be the poster child for the easiest learning disability fix in the world. My parents had means. We went to a decent school. My parents were involved with the school district. They, you know, my sister was also there. We were the poster child of what a typical middle class family should have been, and what I had should have been a relatively easy fix. All it took was one of five teachers to spot it and come up with a solution.
And you had high IQ.
Yeah, and I'm not a stupid kid.
Right, exactly.
It impacts him. It's not just school that it impacts. Carson and I have had some conversations, and it impacts the whole life. It's not that he has lost out on education, and yes, in a sense, he has lost on an education, but he has a college degree. He's been self-sufficient. He's made a lot of money, but his life has been impacted because this wasn't caught.
And
I struggle. You know, I mean, in looking back, I mean, I struggle, but I also put, you know, intuitively, I put structures in place to help me survive. But the reality is, when I communicate, my communication skills are not up to what they could have been had I had the building blocks. I mean, I've got a foundation that has some brick, some sand, some, I mean, it's the hodgepodge of stuff. And fortunately, because I do have a high IQ, I've been able to adapt probably 85 or 90% of the time. But there's times when you're doing things that are hot, that, you know, where I don't have the reading comprehension is difficult for me.
Exactly. So when we get back, I want to go more delving into, I guess, this is where, I guess, the guiding principles can lead us. And really, kind of, Carson's the guinea pig tonight. We're taking, but then we see that he still ended up successful, so the story needs to continue. And what skills he was lacking in high school, and in college based on decision-making of teachers, principals, and administrators, and I guess the state. Your list of Total Education Hour. Dr. Jennifer's guiding principle always leads us to strange conversations, but they're education conversations that we hear all the time in the teacher's lounge. We hear them all the time with parents, and we hear them all the time with administrators. We'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Education Hour and guiding principal, Dr. Jennifer Little, the decision-making process. And we're seeing Carson Pei firsthand go through poor decision-making. He always thought, hey, you know what, it's just me, I had a learning disability. Yeah, and I was, you know, not as intelligent as my twin sister, and I just got left behind. But
I'm going to correct you on a couple of those
go
things,
ahead, sure.
Because that's not entirely accurate. What I would say is I never had an intelligence thing, and I never thought that I had a learning disability. I just thought because I was coming from the public education, I was a couple years behind because everyone who was at the private school had already had grammar, I wasn't the only one. Every kid who came from the public school into the private school was behind. So I was the norm for the public school kids coming into the private school.
Okay. So you seem like you're a sell for private education then, would you say?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say. I'm for just a good quality education. What I'm saying is that my experience is a private education because that's my experience. Public schools could have done the same thing. It has nothing to do with private or public. What it has to do with is I had teachers that showed an interest at me at private school that actually took the time to show me where my deficiencies were and tried to get ahead. That did not happen to me at the public school. So it's not because of the private public. It's just my experience happened to be that private school teachers were trying to fix the problems that were brought to them as a result of the public school system. If that makes sense.
It makes sense, but I want Dr. Jennifer to share what Carson's trying to say.
So Carson had the advantage of commitment from everybody, himself, his sister, his parents, the teachers, the school. They were trying to solve the problem. The public school doesn't have all of those commitments because there are many parents, there are many kids who are not committed, and there are some teachers who are not committed. But the public school is dealing with a lot of kids who are not as bright as Carson was, who is not as skilled and had enough experience, a whole litany of things going on. But Carson is extremely well compensated. And he has chosen a life where he's using his strengths. He deals with financial matters. He talks in numbers, and I kind of glaze over, even though I have good math ability, I have no idea what he's talking about. And he chose a major in college where his strengths of just the details of things, history was his major. You do as what do you call it?
Games, kings, and battles.
Where you just have to know that information. You don't have to have a structure of learning and a hierarchy of information because it's all there, spit it out in linear form. And these are his strengths. Whereas I function in the hierarchies and manipulating different components of it and switching things around, and he looked at me like cross-eyed. So we each have our strengths, and it's the weaknesses that cause either problems or just working on the deficits. But his life has been impacted by both his strengths and his weaknesses. So I've taught him some ways to compensate for things, and he's off and running with it because he's bright and he can do that.
Well, absolutely, and kind of maybe you can kind of explain some of the things you taught him.
Well, part of the thing is that what motivates him. For kids, it might be the grade, it might be the parent approval. In Carson's case, it's a relationship that motivates. He wants somebody to care about him and for him to care about somebody else. The value of a person is that impact. Why do you choose to work for a particular teacher when you don't for somebody else? It's the relationship. And something that he needs is to have a structure, what he was saying, with structures. And in some types of jobs, they are well structured. If you're a clerk in a bank, there's a certain routine, there's a structure. However, if you're a freelance artist, there's no structure in place. And so you may drift around and never accomplish anything. So Carson, because he doesn't understand or has difficulty understanding the hierarchies and priorities of things, everything comes out looking the same. He's great on the details. He sees all the trees, but he doesn't see the forest. So he needs to have somebody say, okay, here are the top priorities, and under priority one, here's this bunch of information or structure or procedures or whatever. And once it's laid out for him, he can take it and run with it.
Okay, so Carson, now tell us, okay, you went through your elementary days, you went into high school. What skills did you lack, even with private school, when you got to high school, based on some of the issues and decision-making process you talked about when you were younger?
Well, I mean, it really came, I mean, for me, the things that I've been struggling with, and even to this day I still struggle with, I mean, it's hard for me to organize ideas and write.
Okay.
Am I okay at it? Yeah. I mean, but it's not something that I excel at. So in order for me to put together, like, for example, if I'm trying to write a proposal, it takes me probably 3 times longer than a friend of mine, simply because I have to read it and read it and read it and organize it and organize it and organize it, because it doesn't come naturally to me.
Right. Okay.
So those are the types of things where you know, that's all along. I mean, that's high school. That's just writing. So in high school, I'd have the same thing. Test taking, I'd have the same thing. To this day, writing proposals, I have the same thing. So there are certain things that as Jennifer was mentioning, I've been in the mortgage business for a large portion and real estate finance. So I can manipulate numbers in my head effortlessly. So that part's easy for me. So there's certain things that, as Jennifer was saying, there's certain things that I do extremely well. And what I've noticed is that when I really do well, the reason why I do well in the mortgage industry is it's like Ron Popeil, I set it and forget it. If I've got a good loan process and a good team, they handle it. All I need to do is, you tell me what I need to go get it, and it's done. And I'm good at the interpersonal skills with people because I can relate well to them, and they trust me. So those are the types of things where I do really, really well. If I were to like, for example, my nightmare degree would be an English degree.
Right, here.
You know, because if I had to read, like, I mean, and it takes me a long time to read, and it makes sense. I actually had a friend of mine that's a very good reader, and he just taught me just kind of skim through stuff. And because for me, I get soaked up in details, so if I skim through it, ironically, I did better in school when I didn't read anything. If I just show up the night before to the study group, I do better on the final than if I actually read the stuff and I prepared. So because from my disability is I can put stuff in my head super easily. I just don't know how to unorganize it.
Exactly. So I'm going to interrupt you really quickly, and I'm going to go right to Dr. Jennifer, because, Carson, what if we could have taught you that in school? What if we, like you said, we said the one-size-fits-all peg, and that's where I think our discussion's going, is poor decisions and the guiding principles led to decisions that have not helped you in the school. But you were able to compensate in certain ways. But what if we could teach you these skills? What if they would have taught you these skills? How would that have helped you in your career?
Those are exactly the questions that I would like to have answered everywhere. Because Carson's disability, if you want to call it that, or his weakness, is his language. If you listen to him, he talks in nouns and verbs and continuation. He's not using, in the technical terms of what we were talking about, subordinate clauses, where you have a main sentence, and then you have an embedded partial sentence. That sets up the hierarchies, the priorities of things that works in the brain to stimulate the ability to organize, because he has everything out in the details. Nothing is prioritized. And this is something that we expect kids to have by about age 5. And for some reason, he didn't get it. Yet English language, oral language, is not taught in schools. It's not part of the standards. It's not part of the curriculum. Never has been. But this is where I see kids having the greatest problem, because in a subtle form, you have a person who's well compensated and appears to be doing okay, working hard or hardly working, whichever you want to do it, but they're getting through. But he's not up to his potential. Then you have the other kids who struggle and struggle, and they may be working at their full potential, but their potential isn't anywhere near what Carson's is.
So Carson, yeah, hold on 1 second, Carson. One other point, and I'll let you follow up on that. But one question I have to ask: if you had a magic wand, what skills would you want to be taught in school that you weren't taught?
You know, you're asking a question that I just don't know how to answer, because I don't know what my choices are. If you give me choices, I mean, it depends on which grade I'm. If teenager, I'd rather have the Brad Pitt skills with,
Well, let's just say high school to college. Let's say high school to college.
I think that one of the things that has been, looking back, is a skill that would help me out the most is my ability to do reading comprehension. You know, I was either a phonics kid and they didn't teach phonics. I mean, I don't know what there was. There was something that was missing on what I had to do. I mean, if I were looking back, that would probably be the number one skill that I would probably like. I mean, it's hurt me in it's hurt me.
Reading comprehension is based on language, Neil.
Yes.
And that's the first page in any reading textbook for teachers, but it is ignored because reading is nothing more than oral language skills. And Carson doesn't have the perspective on it because, all he has is his experience, and he doesn't know what we as teachers know. That reading comprehension is a language skill, and he missed it.
So, Dr. Jennifer, that's what you're saying. You see it from when he talks based on, if you don't have reading comprehension, you're not kind of creating a bigger vocabulary and language skills from reading more and more material.
And Carson has an excellent vocabulary. This is where his family and his intelligence and the schooling have done him great service, because he has a huge vocabulary. He just doesn't have the ability to formulate sentences in various structures that put things in priority and priorities and organize well. It's the main idea, the detail, the context clues, the inferences, and that's the reading instruction that begins in fourth grade. He missed it because he doesn't have the language structure understanding in a natural oral vocabulary.
Put in perspective, Neil, I could be a great CPA. I'd be a terrible attorney.
Okay.
And I've got the IQ to be able to handle anything that I choose to do.
Exactly, you do. But so when we get back, I want to go back in the – I guess we have to change the name of the show. It's basically what as an average learner that struggles can become successful but yet still wishes they had more skills taught in school. And why have – and we talked about the mistakes of what happened that led Carson to those difficulties in school. And then we still haven't figured out what to do next. You listen to Education Hour. Back more with Dr. Jennifer Lindell and Carson Pei. We'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Education Hour. And now Dr. Jennifer's going to get – what I do is I interview people, ask the questions, learn more and more, get questioned. But that's what a broadcast journalist does, is able to kind of delve into where I want to go for that last segment. And people driving the car, I'm going to go and flat out say, you know what, I'm going to say it's not Carson's education system that failed him. It's the way we teach boys. I'm going to go right off the bat with something that I'm a huge fan of in a way, and saying that we don't know how to teach boys in school. And I've seen it so many times that the way we our instruction is not for boys. So, Carson, you never said that you were bored. But yet, when we talk about reading comprehension, and I'm going to ask Dr. Jennifer Little the same question. When we talk about reading comprehension, a lot of times boys do not do as well with reading comprehension based on 1,000 things going in their brain at once, moving and wanting to multitask, and to kind of remember a story that really doesn't interest you,
mm-hmm.
that leads to poor comprehension. There's my take on things. Do you think I might be on the right track on this, Carson?
Well, you know, you're asking an academic question. So what I can say is, from my perspective, is I didn't really like to read. I'd much rather play sports. So I was a sports playing kid.
Me too.
And that was important to me.
Exactly.
And boys are more active than girls.
Right.
Whereas in my case, my sister would read all the time. So, I mean, I remember my first book that I read was Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. You know, that was the one story that I recall that actually grabbed my attention.
Exactly. So let me, and I'm going to go right to Dr. Jennifer right after that and kind of give you my point. My point is this. I didn't enjoy reading, and there was a study out that boys' brains develop differently than girls, and we don't catch up to girls, women, till we're in our 30s. And that's where it happens. So if Carson would decide, I'm going to go back, get my PhD now, and start to really delve into his expertise area, he probably would say, holy cow, I can do it now. But guess what? He couldn't do it at 20. And a lot of boys are out there struggling, and now we're more and more, they don't have the ability to gain strength like in science and math. Those things are disappearing for them. They don't have anything to kind of keep their motivation. We talk about reading comprehension as something, you know, that is a situation. It's because we're just not interested. We want to keep moving. We want to do things. I didn't enjoy reading until I was 33 when I was going to grad school. And now I am an avid reader who enjoys reading and can read and pick up things and take care of things in 2 seconds, read a 10-page report and say, okay, I'm ready to go. Let's comprehend it and let's roll with it. But I couldn't do that at 20. I couldn't do that at 14. So, Dr. Jennifer, maybe we're missing the point. Maybe we just don't know how to educate boys.
I think that's part of it, but it goes back to the principle. We don't know what works and what doesn't work, and we're forcing teachers are being forced to do the same thing. It's here in California, they are using state-adopted text. They have to use the same material, which, as Carson says, is boring.
Yeah.
I was a first grade dropout. Did anybody know I dropped out? No.
No.
I was a mental, emotional dropout, and I did not pick up any interest until I actually was teaching a class of kids who had learning problems, and grad school was where I took off.
Exactly. So then it goes to a point, and then there, the definition. So the one-size-fit education. Now, let me give you another example, Carson. And I'm learning more about what's going on with you as this is where my expertise is. I can take a child, an adult, anyone, see their learning style, be able to figure it out and say, well, here's where they should have gone and help them, regardless what age they are. I think that once you had that not loving education type of thing, meaning reading, it's just like, well, okay, I'm gonna go into things I enjoy. But now if we would say to you, Carson, okay, I don't know how old you are. I think you're definitely a little bit older than I am. I was born in 73, so you were talking, you were in first grade.
Yeah, I'm 45, so I'm born in 67.
Yeah, so I'm 39, and I'll be 40 in January. That basically what I would say to you is this. yes, it's a reading comprehension thing, but I also believe all of us that are wired to be entrepreneurs in ways and wired to be in the fields of financial and constant, we're multitaskers, and we don't teach multitasking in school. We teach one step at a time, not 20 things.
Let's throw something in there, Neil. Research with molecular biologists have proven that multitasking is not really what's going on. You're switching your attention from task to task, but it's one at a time. People are wired for one task at a time.
But they want to switch over and over again. And in our education system, that's not the way things go. We can't say, okay, we're going to do a couple math problems. Now we're going to stand up. We're going to do this now. Those math problems are over. Let's go ahead and try some word problems. It's not constantly back and forth. Okay, we're going to take a break. I like maybe an example of a normal situation. I do it during the day at work. Because my day at work is two different things. One is during the day I'm kind of editing radio, doing certain things. So let's say I'm finishing up editing. Now I'm waiting 20 minutes for it to be finished. Well, then I'm going to go ahead and tweet on my iPhone. And in the same time doing that, I'll be able to look on the computer and read something and then even look at some and think about something else as well, all at the same time. There are kids out there that can do this, but yet we don't find a place in education for them that they're considered, well, you know, it's just they're not focused. They're all over the place. So I'm going to go to the Carson, not an education term. Wouldn't you say that's a lot of times what we think when we're in school? We're looking at the girls. We're looking at specifically who's tapping their pencil across. We're not paying attention to the teacher. How many teachers do truly remember?
I'll give you a classic example. The one time in sixth grade, I remember we covered grammar. Here's what the teacher said. Okay, after grammar, we're going to go have PE. How many of you guys know what a verb is? Of course, I raised my hand because I knew that if I raised my hand, we were going to go out and go to PE quicker. And so the teacher picked on the girl who was the straight, you know, the goody two-shoes girl who knew exactly what a verb is. I had no clue what a verb was. I just knew that it was going to go out to PE. So I raised my hand. Did I know what it was? No.
No.
But so I remember distinctly that. You know, on Schoolhouse Rock, shoot. I mean, if we didn't have Schoolhouse Rock, you know, I kind of knew what a conjunction was because of Schoolhouse Rock. but you know, I mean, that was, honestly, I got more grammar, you know, from watching cartoons, which my mom wouldn't let me watch, than I got from my entire sixth grade year.
So I would say multitasking, Carson, and not multitasking, I would say specifically certain techniques help you learn and do things. But our motivation is different. And what we're trying to do is kind of like the one-size-fits-all education system. And this is going to lead to another roundtable discussion, Dr. Jennifer. My brain's moving. Next week, we're going to discuss gender and education, how the difference between teaching boys and girls, and even considering splitting them, which is another movement. It's happened in the Pittsburgh public schools. It's happened all over the world. And really, boys and girls think differently. And we as a society want to kind of make them equal, but yet we don't want to make them equal. We got to make them equal, treated equally, but completely different. So what is your thought on that, Dr. Jennifer, as I'm going, I guess, to next week's topic, because that's what I want to talk about.
Well, there's a lot of research out there, and I hope you're prepared for it, because it's the separate but equal type of thing. And then you're still going to get into the different developmental milestones and readiness. And then there's the legal challenge to it.
But it's happened before, and it's in public schools right now. But let's just talk about how we learn differently and why can't we create the ability in our education systems to teach differently. You went in the direction of saying the decision's made for Carson, but there are 100,000 Carsons out there running around right now in schools that I work with, lots of boys, every day. And guess what? They think completely different than girls for the most part. We do have different – we have boys that really get things and are just brilliant, and we have girls that are flighty as can be. and really don't care about school. So, but we're, if we're looking at the percentage as a whole, we're seeing these things. So that's the thing. So Carson, I guess I'm going to ask the question, what do you feel? Do you like what Dr. Jennifer's presented on some mistakes, or do you think that just, I guess, that you ended up where you wanted to be finally in life? Do you think it's just that that's how boys learn? What is your thought? Not as an educator, but as just an opinion person.
Well, as a man, we clearly think differently.
Yes.
But, I think that we do have different distractions, and I think that there are certain things that we, you also have to take a look at the cultural conversations too, math skills and all sorts of stuff that gets thrown in there. The reality is, I think that from looking back, I was just a kid trying to survive. I just happened to be halfway decent at sports. So that was kind of my saving grace. And that was, that's what I enjoyed, the academics I needed to do. And, I'll leave it up to the academic experts whether or not what the best way for me. I'm just looking back and looking at all the inadequacies and all the things that all the red flags. Now that I look at it, there were plenty of red flags. Unfortunately, it just didn't get solved. Hopefully, whether it's a all male class or an all female class, I don't know if that's an answer or not. I just know that unfortunately the system, there were plenty of times and plenty of opportunities where I was let down.
Okay, that was a great point. So, Dr. Jennifer, I'm going to give you a minute 30. You're saying it's more about decision-making process. I'm saying it's more a boy-girl thing. So give us, in like a minute 30, the decision-making process of education that's hurt Carson early on.
It all goes back to the people who are making decisions don't have enough or accurate information. They are basing their decisions based on their beliefs of what they think is going on, the assumptions that they are making about the kids and about the whole education, and that we don't have people who are making decisions who are accountable and responsible for everything that they're making decisions on. This is the problem. We have politicians who are making decisions about education. They know nothing about child development or instruction. Yet teachers are being made to be accountable, knowing what they know about kids, that it's wrong to be doing things, but their feet are to the fire just because the politicians are the people who make the laws and say that they have to. Teachers are not allowed to have a voice to make the knowledge known. They know that kids come to school with inadequate language. And we've been through all the assumptions about what influences a kid. But we're looking at a classroom where we have 25 or 30 kids. We have 25 or 30 variations of lots of different problems that could be going on that's creating either the success or the failure. And we don't know what we're looking at.
Well, I'm looking forward to next month's guiding principal, Dr. Jennifer Little. You can Google her. And thanks again, Carson, for being the guinea pig tonight. And then I kind of diagnosed it at the end. And as men, we know this. So I appreciate you guys both calling. So thanks again for calling.
Thank you, Neil.
All right, take care.